Another weekend, another very busy slate of boxing matches, and I'm sure as you all know by now, when there's boxing to be talked about, we only call upon one man and one man only, the sweet scientist, Large from Nomas Online and thesportingblog.com. What's going on, Large?
Not so much, man. You know, I'm back on the East Coast, which is very exciting. I'm in town for the Klitschko-Ibrahimov fight. First time I've been back in a while. Feeling like myself again, you know.
Yeah, we're going to get to Klitschko in just a second. Obviously, we're coming off of Kelly Pavlik, Jermaine Taylor 2, a great rematch, everything we expected and more. And you actually popped your live blogging cherry for that bout, doing a great live blog on thesportingblog.com. So, you know, I got to ask you, first off, you know, we did the live blogging thing once, very hectic. In short, what did you think of the whole live blogging experience?
Oh, it was cool. It was good. It was good for me over there because I got a lot of traffic. Deadspin picked up that I was doing it, so I had a lot of people over there. It was really funny with that whole live blog thing. I got a ton of hits for it. Was great. And then Sunday or Monday, I guess I got a note from somebody over at the Sporting News about some guy with some weird random blog, and he'd been live blogging the fight and basically wrote a very angry note to the Sporting News like, tell this guy to get off my blog. And I don't know, somebody was promoting my blog on there, or I wonder if what happened was that they had the stuff up in real time. I really did get it up pretty quickly, if I was getting it up so much quicker that somebody was. But I just thought it was funny that this guy was like, this guy from the Sporting News is pimping himself on my site. Man, you know, I got bigger fish to fry.
Do promoters get mad at guys like you who are live blogging an event that they want people to pay for? Do they feel as though that would take away any dollars out of their pocket, or at this point the internet and, you know, the people who would actually buy the fights are pretty much two distinct entities?
Look, man, you know, I think that anybody who's going to buy it is going to buy it, and nobody who's on the fence is going to decide not to buy it because they can read somebody's live blog account of it. Look, you've live blogged. You know how much you can get in there in the rounds. It's kind of frantic. Like, I can touch type, but it's important to me to watch the fight. And even then, it affects the way you see the fight, right? But there's only so much to say. I mean, how ridiculous is it to sit there and read, like, you know, big hook to the right, you know, it's kind of preposterous. I mean, I felt good about it at the level at which I felt like I gave, of the live blogs I saw, I mean, even, you know, it's ESPN, I put myself up against them, I felt I gave a much better account of what was actually happening in there than those dudes did. So I felt good about that, but still, you know, you get so little of what's actually happening.
I just love the thought of the throwback Lars, you know, the guy that I know that, you know, if anyone's ever seen you, you're very much a throwback just in your presence, and also, you know, the stuff that you write about, just you live blogging to me is just a very funny thought, because it's something I never would have expected. But like I said, you did a great job.
Think of it this way, too. I do have to throw in here, to me, the live blog is a throwback, to be honest.
Really?
You'll be surprised about this, but it really is. And I like it for that very reason, because live blogging of fights, more than anything, because there was a time back before television, and even my dad will tell you about this. My dad has told me many times that the way that he followed, my dad was a big Floyd Patterson fan, and the way that he followed Floyd Patterson, Ingo Johansson 2, was by listening to it off a local radio station, and the radio station didn't have anybody on site. So basically what they were doing was reading wire reports on the air.
Wow.
Of the fight. And what is that, my friend, but a prehistoric live blog?
Yeah, it's
so
very interesting.
Yeah, it's pretty much the same thing, basically. And you just have fights now. Everybody could get them on TV, but some people don't want to pay the money. And so at that level, I think it's a valuable service. Crazy thing to do, though, man. Definitely gets a little nuts.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, it gets frantic, and you can't really truly appreciate the fight, but I thought you painted the picture well, and we've already broken down what, you know, what actually happened in the bouts and everything that went on during those 12 rounds. But really, to me now, the big question is, where do these two guys go from here? There's a lot of questions as to whether or not Kelly Pavlik will actually fight John Duddy if John Duddy is victorious tomorrow night. And then obviously Jermaine Taylor, is he moving up? Is he going back to 160? Is he going to fight, you know, Joe Calzaghe? I mean, there's a lot of question marks after these guys. No clear picture as to who they're going to be fighting next. So I turn it over to you. Pavlik, Taylor, where do these two guys go from here?
Well, I know as a Montreal guy, you're thinking that Duddy's got a tough bout tomorrow night or Saturday night. I know you're thinking of what is that guy's name? Tunisian guy who fights out of Montreal, who's fighting Duddy. Something tells me Duddy's going to win that one.
Waleed.
Yeah. Waleed Smichet. I think Duddy's probably going to get through that one. It does look like Duddy Pavlik is going to happen, mostly because Tito Trinidad has dropped out of the Pavlik race. Hasn't dropped out of it, but his dad has been pretty adamant that Tito will not fight at 160. That he had trouble making the 170 weight for the Roy Jones fight. So it looks like you're going to see Pavlik Duddy, and Pavlik, you know, in the post-fight presser was himself resolute that he wants to stay at 160, that he spent too much time trying to get those belts to give them up right away. I hope that he can stick around at 160 for a while. I've written that a couple times because I think he has potential to be the kind of guy who can add his, 160 is a historic weight class. And I'd love to see him put his name alongside of the Bernards and Monzones and Haglers and, you know, Sugar Ray Robinsons and Emil, you know, all the great middleweight champs that you think of when you think of the 160 weight class. I think he's got what it takes to put his name with those guys. And I think, you know, he belongs with those guys, but I doubt that it's going to happen because, for two reasons, I think that he does have trouble making 160. He's a big guy. He's too big to be a natural 160. And right now, the way things go, I mean, look, where does Pavlik go after John Duddy? You know what I mean? At 160, there's been some talk of Arthur Abraham, and I'd love to see that fight. You know, as a fight fan, you develop a, as a fight fan, you develop a certain instinct for understanding that you think would be great are just not going to fly because the universe at large is just not that interested in. Pavlik, Arthur Abraham, to me, is a fight where I don't know if Pavlik beats Arthur Abraham. Arthur Abraham is a man wrecker a la Kelly Pavlik. I mean, that would be a hell of a fight, but I can't imagine him putting the belts on the line, putting his undefeated record on the line, his reputation, in a fight against a guy like Arthur Abraham that's going to be for short money. You know, that's not a pay-per-view fight. So the Tito fight is the biggest money fight out there for him. And in a way, I like it because I think it builds his star to it. I think it's a step up fight for him. It takes him to the next level. It's kind of like Cotto fighting Shane Mosley. Sometimes you got to fight those older famous guys to get a bigger audience. But it'd be for bigger money than anything else that's out there for him. And for that reason, I don't think he's going to put it off too long. And then once he gets there, fights a fight at 168, is he going to get back down? I don't know. Maybe, maybe not.
Is there a chance that he actually loses that fight to Trinidad and then all this, you know, gets flushed down the toilet? I mean, isn't there more risk than reward in taking that bout?
I mean, you know, you're a fight fan. How much chance do you think that Kelly Pavlik has of losing to Tito Trinidad?
I know, but really, like, Trinidad to me just seems like a guy who hasn't done anything in the last 5 years. How do you justify him getting the title shot? And, you know, everyone's got a puncher's chance, and if Tito Trinidad somehow pulls off that mammoth upset, then the Kelly Pavlik sort of phenomenon just falls. I mean, obviously he'd be a huge favorite, but, you know, look at Paul Williams, you know, Carlos Quintana, the things happen, you know what I mean? So it just seems like
it's true. I feel you. Number one, it wouldn't be a title fight because Kelly Pavlik would have no title at 168. I mean, Tito's, there's no way it's going to happen at 160. I imagine that it would happen the same way that this Jermaine Taylor fight happened, which is Pavlik still has the belts, and he'll still have the prerogative to keep them. So no title on the line. Why does Felix Trinidad get a fight with Kelly Pavlik? Well, we all know why. He's, even though he hasn't fought for a long time, he's a huge, huge star. I mean, he's got nothing left. I mean, why do the Rolling Stones still sell out around the world? They're a terrible band. It has no relevance to anything in the world right now. But what are you going to do? They're huge, huge stars. Felix Trinidad is a freaking folk hero in Puerto Rico, which is a boxing mad nation, you know, and in a fight in New York, he commands a huge audience. And so I feel you as a fight fan. It's kind of a meaningless fight, although I think it'd be kind of fun because I mean fun in a very cruel way. I think Tito would get knocked the freaking flip out, you know, because the way Tito is right now, he's going to get hit by Pavlik a lot. He sets up very well for Pavlik to pound into tomorrow, and he'll, you know, Pavlik's not that hard to hit. He'll get his licks in, and it'll be one of those fights. You know what it'll be like? I think it'll look a lot like Oscar Mayorga, you know. Okay. be kind of pretty exciting. Pavlik will knock him out in like the sixth round. But still, the reason that I like it, look, I hear you. The reason I like it is because I think it makes Pavlik, I want to see Pavlik become a bigger star. I think he deserves it. I think it'd be good for boxing. Even though boxing's having a renaissance right now, man, we got a dearth of crossover stars, you know, and that's what boxing's all about. Oscar's going to retire at the end of this year. Floyd, obviously, is making big moves. But we don't have many people that we love, you know. Like Cotto is a perfect example. Everybody in the boxing universe loves Cotto and thinks he's a, you know, Cotto's a superstar in the boxing world right now. You know, go out on the street, you know, go out in Manhattan right now and ask the first 20 people you meet who Miguel Cotto is. Unless you bump into some Puerto Ricans, no one's going to know, right? So that's why I like Pavlik Tito Trinidad. We saw the numbers that Tito Roy Jones did on pay-per-view. I think a Pavlik Tito Trinidad fight would do maybe not so good because Pavlik's not a Roy Jones type draw, but still very good numbers on pay-per-view. It builds his star, helps him get to the next level, so that maybe if Pavlik wants to go back to down to 160, maybe he's big enough name, you know, that he can carry an Arthur Abraham. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Guys have to get big enough so that they can carry good fights in and of themselves. I honestly think that that's what Floyd is doing right now, is building himself to a point where he's big enough that a fight with someone like Cotto will be a mega fight, in the same way that right now Oscar fighting anyone is a mega fight, you know. So that's why I like Pavlik Tito. That's pretty much it.
All right, so those are things that we will keep our eye on. But, you know, looking into the near future, tomorrow night, Madison Square Garden, we got the big heavyweight title unification bout, Vladimir Klitschko, Sultan Ibragimov. And obviously this one is not the sexy heavyweight unification bout that we'd all love from the premier class of the boxing world. But, you know, Klitschko is, in my mind, the perfect example of it's always darkest before the dawn. And there was a time there where, you know, his brother Vitaly was doing his thing, and here's Vladimir losing to guys like Corey Sanders. And now all of a sudden he's, you know, piled up these wins over the Brewsters and the Brocks of the world and the Birds of the world. And here he is probably going to unify the belt. So, you know, I want to get your thoughts on this bout and Ibragimov, a guy who, you know, coming off of a victory over Evander Holyfield and then before that Shannon Briggs, you know, not exactly the right tune-ups that you want for a big showdown against the best heavyweight in the world, but does he in fact have a chance in your mind of sort of derailing this train and unifying those belts himself?
Well, does he have a chance? Yeah, he's got a chance because he does have a big punch. Manny Stewart is all over the place this week, and this is telling to me, to be honest. Manny Stewart is out all over the place this week saying that Sultan Ibragimov will be the best heavyweight that Klitschko's fought in his professional career. Now that tells me only one thing. Manny Stewart is hyping this fight, and if that's the case, then, well, he knows something that we don't, which is that it's probably not going to be that much of a fight. That's the way I see that anyway, because I don't think Sultan Ibrahimov is the best. I think, you know, if Sultan Ibrahimov, Sam Peter, that Sam Peter would beat him 10 times out of 10. So, but, you know, the main thing that people are going to point to, and it's tough not to point to it, is that, you know, Klitschko and Ibrahimov, and then Klitschko fought Ray Austin back-to-back. Ibrahimov is undefeated, but he has one draw. He drew with Ray Austin. And I saw that fight. It was a pretty entertaining fight. It was a knockdown, drag out, you know. Ibrahimov is a real slugger. Ibrahimov put Ray Austin down in the fourth, but then Austin put Ibrahimov down in the tenth. Draw on the scorecards, I don't think anybody disputed it. I thought a draw was a fine result. And the next fight, Ray Austin fights Klitschko, and Klitschko demolished him. I can't, it was in Germany. I can't remember what, if it was the second, was it the second round? Did you see that fight?
Yeah, it was.
Second round, right?
Yeah, second round.
I mean, and it was just wasn't competitive at all. Now, you know, now people, what people are trying to say about that, who are trying to give the benefit of doubt to Ibrahimov, is look, Ray Austin came into the Ibrahimov fight in the best shape of his life and fought the fight of his life against Klitschko. He was at his heaviest weight ever. And the other mediating factor, and having watched the Ibrahimov-Austin fight, I will say that I do believe this is true. Ibrahimov dominated early, and I think that he knocked him down, big knockdown too, in the fourth round. I do think that he thought it, you know, it was a classic. You know, you saw this from Tyson at times in his, you know, after his heyday. It was a classic situation where he seemed to think that he was going to knock the guy out pretty early, and he went he was aiming for the fences a lot early, and I think he shot his wad a little bit early in that fight. So, you know, it's a strategic mistake, but what it says is, oh, he's still better, but, you know, Ray Austin hung in there longer than he expected. I got to say, the way it seems to me is that it's not quite as emblematic of the mismatch that we're going to see on Saturday night, but it pretty much tells the story. That Ibrahimov fought Ray Austin to a draw, and then the very next time he goes out, Ray Austin gets demolished by Klitschko. I think Klitschko's become a great heavyweight fighter. I know nobody wants to hear it, and I think that you should take me at my word on that, because nobody was less of a fan of Vladimir Klitschko than I was, you know, back in the day. I really found him a disgrace to watch back in the Klitschko days, you know, where he would throw two punches and grab the guy, throw two punches. I hated that. He has really, in much the same way that Lennox Lewis did, has really reaped the benefits of what Manny Stewart has to offer. And he has become a thoughtful fighter and an incredibly accurate fighter. And he's got real pop. He throws a really stiff left jab now. And his right hand is, you know, he's the Kelly Pavlik of the heavyweights, man. His right hand is a laser shot, and he throws it straight down the pike. And, you know, I really don't see, Sultan Ibrahimov gets hit a lot. He gets hit a lot by the Ray Austins of the world. You know, he is a southpaw. A lot of people are wondering whether that's going to give Klitschko problems. I don't quite understand why anyone would worry about that when Klitschko has destroyed Chris Bird twice. He's a much craftier southpaw than Sultan Ibrahimov ever will be. He keeps his hands low. He swings for the fences a lot. And I think it could be an early knockout. You know, I do think he's got a pretty good chin. He's a rugged guy. You know, he's in this class of heavyweights that I often write. You know, it seems like they were, like, in their lives, they were destined to either to be heavyweight fighters or longshoremen. You know, like just these slabs of Russian men who are emerging into the heavyweight ranks. Oleg Moskev is another perfect example of this type.
So all that said,
And
though, would you, if presented with the obviously fictitious matchup of Vladimir versus Vitali Klitschko today, both men at their primes, you know, the Vladimir of today and the Klitschko of a few years back, who would you give the nod to? Who would win that bout?
Vladimir Klitschko. Taking out all, you know, all intangibles aside of brothers facing brothers and what that might mean, just each of them as a fighter, I think Vladimir Klitschko is infinitely better than Vitaly ever was. There's no doubt in my mind. Vladimir Klitschko has become, you know, and Manny Stewart says this, and you may say that he's promoting, you know, Manny Stewart says, I think Vladimir Klitschko is one of the best heavyweights of all time. All right. You can say whatever. But he has become a very mobile, very accurate boxing 250-pound fighter. I mean, put Rocky Marciano in there with him and see what happens. You know, it's none of us really want to think that because we don't like him and he doesn't have the personality that we want out of a heavyweight fighter. But I tell you, I've been watching very closely his progress, and I think he's become a hell of a fighter. And Vitaly, in his prime, no doubt that Vitaly has more natural heart. You know, he's more of a natural killer than Klitschko, than his brother is. But heart's not going to do anything when you got a guy who's moving as well as Vladimir does now and sticking that 1-2 in your face, bang, 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 all night. It just wouldn't happen. I think he would beat him. I'm telling you the truth. I think Lennox in his prime against Vladimir Klitschko in his prime right now is a hell of a fight.
Interesting.
Got two guys fighting the Manny Stewart, you know, playbook too. So
right.
It'd be interesting at that level as well.
If Klitschko does in fact defeat Ibrahimov this Saturday night, is the obvious next match him against Alexander Povetkin, given the fact that he defeated Eddie Chambers in that eliminator bout just a couple of weeks ago?
Well, I think that'll be his mandatory. So I think that will be his next fight. I think that Klitschko himself is pretty dedicated to unifying his belts. So in the Povetkin after that fight was pretty open about the fact that he felt that he wasn't ready for Klitschko, and let me tell you something, he ain't. And in that, very soon after, we get this Klitschko-Ibrahimov unification fight, we will get the, what is it? It's not the following week, but March 8th is Sampeter Oleg Maskayev, and that's for Maskayev's WBC belt. Best fight, most exciting fight, I was at this one. It was an exciting night down in AC. It was the best fight of Klitschko's career was Klitschko-Sampeter, you know, just a rock'em sock'em robots fight. Klitschko goes down three times and still wins on points, and I think that was justified. I'm trying to remember if Manny Stewart was with him yet for that. I think that might have been their first fight together. Anyway, I'd love to see a rematch of that fight. I think other than Klitschko, Sampeter is the best heavyweight out there. And I think that rematch would be maybe in the, you know, I mean, all of us are skeptical of the heavyweights these days, but I'll tell you, you know, I'm in town for the Klitschko-Ibrahimov fight at the Garden. And I love heavyweight fights at the Garden. They always bring something out. You know, this is the first heavyweight unifier in all of boxing since Lennox Evander at the Garden. And obviously this fight doesn't have that kind of juice, but it always brings some kind of electricity. That combination of like a big heavyweight fight at Garden is just always fun. And I think Sampeter Klitschko is potentially a pay-per-view fight. I think people would get excited about that. So that to me seems like a more natural next fight for Klitschko, particularly in that he wants to unify the belt so much. And I think he wants to unify the belt so much because he realizes he's got a ticking clock here, you know. I mean, he's not getting any younger. How old is he? He's like...
Who, Klitschko?
32. You know what I mean?
32 in March, so March 25th. I got the, I got this wants, all in my all in the back of my head.
You're a fact checker at heart, man.
Right.
He wants to have a time where people, where it's not anymore like, oh, it's so embarrassing that Vladimir Klitschko is our heavyweight champion. He wants to have a good 2 years where it's like, wow, Vladimir Klitschko is a great heavyweight champion. And I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility for him. But so he's kind of in a race against time, I think, to unify the belts, be the first true heavyweight, undisputed heavyweight king since Lennox Lewis, you know, to be in the long line that begins with, you know, with Jim Jeffries. And he wants all of that stuff. That means something to him now. And if he's going to do it, you know, yeah, Sam Peter's going to be the biggest obstacle. And so that's the fight that most excites me. If he has to fight Povetkin in the interim, whatever, I think he'll kill Povetkin, really. I think Abrashimov, here's what I think. I think Abrashimov Povetkin would be a good fight.
Okay. All right, Lars, before I let you go, and you knew I had to bring this up, like I said, my worlds are colliding because there I am Saturday, Sunday night. And, you know, Saturday night we had the big dilemma. Do I watch Pavlik Taylor 2? Do I watch Kimbo Slice versus Tank Abbott? And then Sunday night it was almost
Which
like,
was awesome, by the way, I got to say. I watched that.
I'm very happy that you're giving that the props, but that's a discussion for a different day. Sunday night, you know, WWE No Way Out, and there's so many pay-per-views, wrestling pay-per-views, it's kind of hard to get amped up for all of them. But, you know, it's the road to WrestleMania. I had to get into it, and Floyd Mayweather, there he is, just walking up, you know, at the beginning of the show, talking to Rey Mysterio, I think nothing of it. But then he jumps over the railing after the match, Big Show's out there, and the whole melee, you know everything that happened. And really, the part that really gave me goosebumps, I must say, is after the punch, which did, in fact, break his nose, the punches, the whole crew running out of the ring, jumping over the guardrail, Leonard Ellerbe tripping, falling. It seemed so surreal. The whole thing seemed so surreal. I jump on my computer. I email you. I need to get your thoughts on it. You're the boxing insider. You're the guy that, you know, has been watching this sport forever. And so, you know, now it's been a few days, been able to digest it. And really, I'm actually kind of shocked that you go on the boxing websites and everything, and it seems as though everyone's just ignoring it. It seems as though everyone's just like, this is not happening. You know, the best fighter in the world is not getting involved with Vince McMahon. But let me tell you, it's real. It's happening. WrestleMania 24, he will be competing. So I got to ask you, I mean, what are your thoughts, the boxing purist? Well, you know, what are your thoughts on Pretty Boy Floyd getting involved with the World Wrestling Entertainment? Yeah, I know for some people they shudder at the thought, but I would love to hear your thoughts on it.
Well, you know, I don't think I'm the right guy to speak for the boxing purists, because as much as I love boxing and as into it as I am, I don't stick with the party line too much, in that I dig MMA. You know, I got nothing but love for MMA, and I like Floyd Mayweather. God, a lot of boxing purists don't like it. The boxing universe can be a very narrow-minded one and tradition-obsessed one, and so things like this, I just don't feel like those guys see the forest for the trees. As far as I'm concerned, all it's doing is putting money in my pocket, if that makes any sense. I wrote that on the sporting blog piece that I wrote about it, which is that I have a financial interest in boxing being successful. Big fights, you know, make me money. I write about them. I go to them. The bigger boxing is, the more business I have, you know. I mean, maybe that's a selfish way to look at it, but look, I want the sport to thrive. And as far as I see it, this is a big picture attitude towards it. I think Floyd is all over the place. You know, he did the Dancing with the Stars. He was in the NBA, you know, Celebrity All-Star Game. Now he's doing this wrestling thing. I think he's looking for ways to make himself a star outside the world of boxing. You know, he wants to be bigger than that, and that's good for boxing. As I said before, Oscar De La Hoya is the sport's only real crossover star now, and he's going to retire. He's past his prime, and he's going to retire at the end of the year. That leaves boxing with a huge void, and I think Floyd is setting himself up to fill it very well. You know, I think that he's going to be the next guy where every time he fights, it's an event, you know, no matter what he does, no matter who he fights. as for what it was itself, you know, and I, as you know, you emailed me right when it happened. I was flabbergasted. I've watched it on all the different places, and it's just hilarious, man. I mean, no, it's just, you know, I have one question for you. You wrote this on Nomos. How do you know that he actually broke his nose? I mean, I believe you, but I'm curious to how, what are you basing it? I know that Vince McMahon and all the promoters would like us to believe that he actually broke the dude's nose, but how do you know that?
Well, there's people online. There's great writers out there. There's guys like Dave Meltzer who writes the critically acclaimed Wrestling Observer newsletter, and there's people who I've asked, and they've confirmed, you know, through their sources within the company that he, in fact, the thing was that Floyd was supposed to pull his punches, and he obviously doesn't know how to. I mean, this is a guy who's fought his whole life, and he just, you know, the adrenaline of the moment and everything, and he actually did break his nose, which was, you know, amazing. I mean,
I believe you. I was just curious. So all you're saying is that you've talked to guys who would tell you if he hadn't, you know,
right,
yeah, no reason to lie about it, and who have access.
Long past the point where people are going to, you know, start pretending that things in wrestling are real when they're not. So they're, you know,
yeah.
He definitely broke his nose, trust me.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, and you made another excellent point on Nomos, which brings me to a third Mayweather family note. Let me just throw this in here. Jeff Mayweather trained Sultan Ibrahimov, the lesser-known Mayweather brother. I don't know why he's lesser-known. You know, he fought Oscar, and he was a great fighter. But yeah, Jeff Mayweather is Ibrahimov's trainer, and evidently it's worked wonders with him. You made the great point on Nomos. Roger Mayweather has got. Roger Mayweather is more WWE than WWE. That dude, I just need to see that guy in a pro wrestling ring, and then I can die.
You know, the interesting thing is that the original angle before this whole thing with Big Show was actually supposed to be Rey Mysterio, who's this, I don't know if you know him, but he's this short Latino guy, wears the mask.
I do know him, yeah,
luchador.
Yeah.
It was actually supposed to be Rey Mysterio against Floyd Mayweather, which I think would have been brilliant for two reasons. A, you see, the thing that, and again, I know you're not a wrestling fan, but I know you keep sort of your finger on the pulse of these big newsworthy items, but on Raw the next night, the fans didn't like Floyd. They were booing him, and he's trying to play up the fact that he's a good guy, a face, and I think that's a mistake. I mean, I was actually just watching the first episode of 24/7, and he will clearly tell people that he's a bad guy. He knows he's a bad guy. He knows his role in About, and I think that might come to bite them in the ass later down the line. But anyhow, if he would have...
So Floyd's supposed to be the good guy, Big Show's supposed to be
the bad guy. Big Show's bad guy, which doesn't make sense if you know Floyd in boxing, but if it would have been Floyd, Rey Mysterio is as big a face as there is in the world of wrestling, and he would have clearly been the face, and it would have worked well, especially after all the shenanigans that he pulled on Cinco de Mayo, coming out in the whole, you know, sombrero hat, and you could have played off of the De La Hoya Mayweather feud, the Latino feud, and then bring in Black Mamba in there. I mean, it would have been perfect. Unfortunately, it didn't really work out that way, but they've got to somehow figure out to A, not script him and not give him lines, because this man is unscripted, and B, try to make him somehow be more of a shade of gray than a true good guy, because it's just not going to work, and the fans are going to crap all over it.
I feel you, man. I'm with you. I can see exactly what you're talking about. Yeah, Floyd doesn't. I mean, he's kind of torn, because he wants to make that money, and so far his path to that money has been being a bad guy against good guys, you know, and playing up that angle. I think that he's torn, though. I do kind of sense that he wants the attention and that he wants to be loved. But in wrestling, yeah, I can only imagine that audience, like, it just wants to hate on him a little bit. I just want to see, I got to see it now. I mean, I just want to see little Floyd in there. I mean, the dude, you know, you were on the set with him, right? A classic. Now the dude is tiny, man. And to see him in there with that 7-foot Goliath, like, what the hell are they going to do?
Well, I think it's actually perfect, because, you know, it's only 5 weeks away, and you're not going to expect Floyd to be jumping around doing all these elaborate wrestling moves. And you could do so much off of the whole giant versus midget type of role that, you know, Andre the Giant perfected so well. So it's not going to be your great technical, you know, Chris Jericho match, but I think there'll be a lot of stalling and a lot of things of that nature. But that's actually the big question for you. I got to know, a guy who will openly say that, you know, you respect the world of wrestling, but you don't really go out of your way to watch it. Will you be watching Monday Night Raw leading up to WrestleMania, and will you fork over the $50 to actually watch Floyd Mayweather in whatever capacity he ends up being involved in that match? Will you watch WrestleMania 24 to see how things turn out with Floyd?
Definitely, definitely. Wow. But it's a little unfair with me, you know, because every time I fork over for a pay per view, it's kind of like a professional expense, and obviously I'll write it off, and I will and I'll be writing about it. So at that level, I don't know if I wasn't a writer, if I didn't have any professional link to it. I guess it would depend on how broke I was at a given moment. But, Floyd Mayweather's, the bottom line is Floyd Mayweather's involvement exponentially increases my interest. You know what I mean? And the fact that, in a way that very little else could, you know, because the fact that he's so small, like just that one shot of him and Big Show down on his knees and Floyd laying into him, it was just so hilarious. I mean, he literally does look like this Lilliputian dude in the ring with him. So, and that's one of the things, you know, I've made comparisons before between Floyd and Ali that people really seem to hate, because people hate Floyd. But one of the things that I like about Floyd, whatever you think about him, he does have like a real sense of fun and theater, you know. And and that's where these boxing purists who sit around and get off on the Kelly Pavlicks and the, you know, of the world and this working class aspect, I like that. You know, I like that in boxing. I've always liked a certain WWE aspect of boxing, of the nicknames and the robes and the theater of it, you know. And I think Floyd has like a really, he's got a real, I thought like, just the sombreros walking in, there's just that sombrero with Oscar, you know what I mean? Like, you got to say, like, a dude who will walk in wearing that sombrero and that outfit does not take himself too seriously, you know.
Or walking in with Wayne Newton and Mark Cuban.
Exactly. Like, I really dig that about Floyd. And so that's primarily what I dig about this WWE gambit, is that, you know, it's just another way, obviously, it gets him in the newspapers, which is what he's all about, and what, you know, let us remember, Ali was all about, too. And it's fun. And, you know, it's this big theatrical thing. And so on that level, believe me, on Nomad Sporting Bob, getting a lot of feedback, very angry, you know, who is this little chump? I'm not going to pay any more attention to him until he fights Cotto. Yeah, whatever. I part ways with that crowd at that point. I'm into it.
Well, that's music to my ears, my man, because I'm very happy that at least you're accepting this. I know there's a lot of people out there that are not very happy with Floyd right now, but like I said, my world's colliding, and I cannot be happier. And really, all it means is that we're going to have a lot to talk about over the next few weeks, and then hopefully, you know, breaking down Klitschko's victory, and then you, as you mentioned, we got Pacquiao. We got tons of things to talk about. So Lars,
Vasquez, next big fight on the horizon is Vasquez Marquez. That's March 1st, and that's huge.
I think that's a big night for Showtime. They finally get to nudge their way into the mix of all the big bouts between you know, everything that HBO is doing. But Lars, thanks so much for, you know, your insight, and really enjoy the fight tomorrow night, because like you said, not a lot of people expecting this to be, you know, Holyfield Lewis, but it should be definitely an interesting one. And anytime you get the heavyweights at the Garden, like you said, it's always a memorable night. Enjoy the bout. Thanks again, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for having me, man. It's always great to be at the park.